Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can.
Coming up this hour on the show, we are stunned to a news. And in 40 minutes, Urban Meyer, Jacksonville now, but the Big Ten again. We'll discuss coming up here later on in the show. I've got a theory on this. Next hour, our friend Brian Jones, formerly of Gio and Jones and Simo and Jones. A couple of iterations here on CBS Sports Radio. Now a member of the CBS Sports Television team, the SEC on CBS and College Football Today. What did we call the Jones and Moore show?
Mojo.
Mojo. That was the official name of the show, the Mojo Show?
It's Mojo with Chris Moore and Brian Jones.
That's what we actually called it. Like that wasn't just a nickname for it.
No,
that was the official name of the show.
On the website, it just said Mojo, 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
And that was when we launched, right, 2013?
Yes, that was the original evening 6 to 10 p.m. where Zach Elb is now show.
So it was 2013, it's the Mojo Show in the evening, 6 until 10, and we are overnights.
Yes.
After 2 years in overnights, we get the bump up to the evenings. Did the Mojo Show last both years?
Yes, it lasted the first 2 years of CBS Sports Radio, and then the Mo was out to other roles. The Joe went to the morning show where we are now.
Got it. Okay, so we move into evenings, and then the Joe, Brian Jones, moves directly to mornings, and that's with Gio?
I believe so, yes.
Yes.
Before we got to a Taz and then a Moose.
So there's 2 years of Mojo, where it's Jones and Mo.
No idea what that was, but it was entertaining to somebody.
And then Joe moves to mornings with Gio, and Pete, you're on that show. How long does Jones do the Gio and Jones show?
Wow. I think it was 3 years. I feel like 3 years is the number. I get foggy with math.
Okay, 3 years. And then that led to Taz and Moose.
Correct.
And then Taz and Moose did 2 years.
Yes.
And then we took over now almost 2 years ago.
Right.
That now, makes sense math-wise since 2013.
Yep, I think Pete's got it. I think that makes sense.
So we have followed in a lot of the Joe time slot.
Yes. Yes, we have followed the Joe. Somebody asked me in Boise, so, you know, what's next for you guys? I'm like, we're really happy doing mornings. It's been really fun. I really enjoy it. I said, I think we're staying in mornings, but then again, we've had every time slot known to man, so I'm not sure what's next. I mean, maybe we're just digital only at some point in time.
Oh, I'm feeling great. We get some Uber Eats in here.
I think we're 14 months away from being the longest standing CBS Sports Radio morning show ever. So I think that has to be our first goal.
Oh, that's actually a good point. When do we surpass, I guess, Gio and Jones? We got to find out exactly how long Gio and Jones is on the air. Then we've got to try to top that.
Yeah, it would be Gio and Jones because Tiki and Tierney was 2 years.
Well, it was Tiki, Tierney, and Dana.
But that is, that show with Tiki and Tierney was 2 years.
Taz
and Amoose was 2 years. Gio and Jones, if they were 3 years, we got to shoot for 3 years and 1 month, like Price is Right, and we become the big morning show.
Man, figuring out the CBS Sports Radio morning show lineups over the years is like figuring out the Timberwolves front office. Who was the GM? Who was the head coach that year? They fired that guy after two seasons. That guy only got a year and a half.
The Knicks head coaching since 2000.
Exactly.
It's like Aaron Boone is the program director. Different lineup every day.
Yesterday, there was supposed to be a bunch of hobnobbing done amongst the Power Five and Notre Dame to figure out the college football playoff and expanded to 12. The reason that they have jumped directly to 12 is the powers that be believe it's the easiest way to get consensus. They feel as though with the Power Five conferences, and that's really all that they care about, Power Five and then Notre Dame, that if they're going to get all the conference commissioners on board, that they want as many spots as possible in a college football playoff to make everybody feel like, hey, there's a way in for you. There's a guaranteed way in. You could get multiple teams in there as well. The more the merrier in terms of building consensus, because then also you'll have the buy-in from the group of fives. You see, if you just go from four to six, the group of five still go, well, we don't have a path. We don't have a path in there. And if you go from four to six, let's just say you have the five power conference automatics and a group of five automatic, you know, the SEC or the Big Ten doesn't want it because they're like, no, we like when there's a wild card in there. We want a second team in there. You know, the SEC has had that before. We've had Alabama and Georgia in the same college football playoff. We've had them playing one another. So the power conferences don't want to go only automatic bids because then that shuts the door on a second team getting in. So 4-6 doesn't help. 4-8 does a little bit because you could do six automatics, say five power conferences, a group of five as the sixth, and then two wild cards. But again, the two wild cards, you know, the Pac-12's going, well, we'll never get one of the wild cards. We'll never get one of the at-large bids. So we want it bigger. We want a group of 12 teams. Now, I think 12's too much. They would have four first-round byes, then the other eight would play one another. I don't like 12. I think it's too much. I think going from 4 to 12 is basically recreating the NFL playoffs, and the NFL playoffs are great because they're the NFL playoffs, not because they're the college football playoffs. So I would much rather see 4-8, frankly. And I understand why 6 doesn't work for a lot of people. I would much rather see 4-8. But they want 12 for the reason that I just mentioned. The reason why there is gridlock right now at getting something done is that I believe it's tied into the television partners. Right now through 2024, it was a 10-year deal that ESPN signed. 2014 to 2024. If college football's powers changed the playoff now before the end of this contract, ESPN would have dibs on all of the playoff games. All of them. They own the college football playoff. They broadcast all three of the games now. If they expanded to 12 teams, all of that inventory goes to ESPN and ESPN alone. Big Ten, Pac-12 doesn't want that, because the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are Fox properties. And Fox is investing money into the Big Noon kickoff, investing money into the Big Ten and Pac-12 championship games. And the Big Ten and Pac-12 don't want to go to their television partner and say, yeah, we know that you spend hundreds of millions of dollars on us, but you know what? You're kind of shut out of the playoffs. So I think that's the biggest reason there's gridlock. There's two power conferences tied directly into a television deal that they would feel like they're screwing over their television partner. And by the way, I don't think this is a one-way street. I think Fox is probably saying to the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, don't vote for that. Don't do that. So I think it's on both sides. So to me, your easiest solution here is waiting the next three seasons. It's over in 2024. negotiate this next whatever expansion is going to be for 2025 and beyond. I mean, I can certainly live with a four-team playoff for the next couple of winters. I don't think it's that broken. In fact, I like it. You know, I've always said this. I hated the era where you got voted into the national championship. I mean, that was the absolute worst. So anything more than that was going to be better. And the BCS happened. And we were all like, oh, thank God at least we're going to decide this on the football field. And it was two teams. And that always felt like, is this really the best way to solve this? Because it's only two teams, and we've got computers deciding who the two teams are. We went to four and a committee, and this is light years better. I mean, light years better than what it was in the voting era and then also the BCS era. I could live with this. I could live with this for a while. I realize there's no pathway in for a group of five team, although I did lay out why Cincinnati and BYU need to be taken seriously this year. But the issue is that all things have to happen for BYU and or Cincinnati, and it still might not work. I mean, BYU and Cincinnati have to come into the season with somewhat of expectation so that you're kind of ranked and you can get into the top 10 or top 15 either when you start the season or relatively quickly, which both are. You have to have multiple Power 5 opponents that are reputable on your schedules. You can't control that considering how far scheduling is out. You also have to have, you have to run the table, and then you have to also go you have to go undefeated, and then you also have to have help in front of you. Again, things that you can't control. And then you have to have a committee vote you in. So I understand why the group of five is bothered and annoyed and wants a better path. Totally get that. But I really don't mind this because I'm going to be honest with you. You guys know my affinity for Boise State. You guys know that I was pulling for Boise State on Saturday night. And look, the love that I get in Boise and the access that we've gotten from the school and that program and having gone to two games, I mean, I love everything about it. But Boise State plays maybe the sixth best team of the Big 12 and loses on their home turf on Saturday. You're going to make the argument that they belong in the college football playoff. Now, okay, this year is a little different because they're maybe not their best version of themselves. But that's where the sell is really hard. It's not like they lost by a point to Oklahoma. It's not even like they lost by a point to Iowa State. They lost by a point at home to Oklahoma State. And they couldn't score a point in the second half. And that's one of the best group of five schools there are. You know, when UCF goes 12-0 and says we're the national champs, yeah, no. No. Because where's the proof that you could have won 9 Power 5 games, 10 Power 5 games, 11 Power 5 games? Again, if you're getting to the college football playoff, you've got to win your conference, usually unless you're a really great SEC team or a great Big Ten team or something. But that means you go 11-1 or 10-2 and that's 8 or 9 power conference wins that Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State or whatnot get. Like, that's the bar. You've got to win your conference, which is going to be 7-1, 8-1, or 8-0 or 9-0. And then you got to win your college, your conference championship game usually, right? So now we're talking about 9 Power 5 wins. That has nothing to do with your non-conference schedule. Nothing. Okay, so let's assume that you get 2 Power Conference wins outside of that, or 1 Power Conference win outside of that. You know? Now you're talking about 10 Power Conference wins or 9 Power Conference wins. You're going to try to sell me that UCF or Boise State could win 9 games against Power Conference foes? No, that's why I brought up BYU. They actually will play 9 games against Power Conference foes. They've already played 3. But it's a tough sell for me. It's a tough sell for me to believe that those group of 5 schools could win 9 Power Conference games. I'm not saying you got to win 9 SEC games because USC doesn't have to do that. But you got to win 9 games from a Power 5 team. I mean, these schools, it's tough for them to do that once a season, twice a season. Like, if Cincinnati who just beat Indiana, can beat Notre Dame, that's a big, big, big thing. Now let's say also we're going to line up, okay, now you're going to play Virginia Tech, and now you're going to play Washington, now you're going to play Iowa, and now you're going to play, you know, Georgia Tech. Can you win all of those games as well? Now you got to win all of those other games. Not all of them are great, but they're all Power 5 opponents. That's a really tough sell for me. So this power, the way the playoff is set up with these four teams, yeah, there's not a path for a group of five. There isn't. But I'm not sure there should be. And you know, I hate saying that because that takes out Cinderella, but I'm really not sure it should be. Like, is a group of five school ever one of the four best teams in America? Okay, so now if you expand it to 12, yes, there's no question, I believe, that on any given year, Cincinnati right now, BYU right now, this is before they get to the Big 12, UCF, Boise State, that those schools are absolutely one of the 12 best schools in America on their best year. Yes, I can absolutely get down with that. Are they one of the four? I don't think so. No. Now, I would also say it's their best year. Are they one of the top 12? Yeah. But that's why I don't get aggravated when the committee doesn't slide them into one of those top four slots. And the committee takes a lot of grief for this because we want to see the Cincinnati's. We want to see the UCF's. We want to see the Boise State's. But if we're really honest, is the committee doing its job? Yeah. Now, the committee's job is also creating good television. It's not just rewarding worthiness. And you could argue, well, Cinderella's good for TV. And I would agree with that because that upset of Boise State by Boise State over Oklahoma resonates 14 years later. That was great television. Absolutely unbelievable theater and television. But if you're really looking at the four best teams in America, the committee's gotten it right. They pretty much have gotten it right. But that TV thing, I think that's what's jamming up right now, getting this change done. The change will eventually happen. If you're waiting for it to happen, it will, whether it's an expansion to 8 or 12, probably 12. It's going to happen. I just think that it makes the most sense. It's most logical to wait until after this television contract's done and do it in 2025. You know, you negotiate it before 2025, so you negotiate it next year in 2022 or 2023, and you get it ready for 2025. When we come back, I got some thoughts on the Mets documentary, the 86 Mets, Once Upon a Time in Queens, the four-part series from ESPN last week that it also stunned to a news. Coming up next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This year like last year, the best is right here on CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
The DA Show is available every single morning on your phone. You can listen to us as part of the CBS Sports app or the radio.com. Now, Odyssey app, if you have the radio.com app, it's termed the Odyssey app now. So update that and listen to us there. In fact, on the Odyssey app, you can pause, rewind, and fast forward as well, the DA Show. So listen to us for free on either one of those. So, four-part series, each 1 hour long of maybe even more than that. But I watched it on demand, so it was like 50 minutes per episode minus commercials. And that was the 30 for 30 done Once Upon a Time in Queens about the 86 Mets. And I thought it was interesting because I'm not sure how much interest there is in a story like that outside of New York. And I'm very sensitive to this subject because we do a show from New York City for an audience that is decidedly not New York City. And I do think that our network and our hosts can oftentimes, at least the ones based in New York City, now many of us are not, many of our hosts are not, but the ones based in New York City can, by very human nature, be, you know, can be motivated by local stories or local topics. And this just is, again, human nature. I mean, imagine wherever it is that you live and you listen to sports talk, you listen to the conversations happening at bars or at your office, you are talking to your friends, you're texting with your buddies, you're in a house that's watching certain games, you know, you are naturally going to be motivated by those stories. It's around you. You're in it. You are absolutely in the middle of a certain storm, so you talk about those things. So I think that's been a challenge, you know, for having a network based in New York City that is not a New York City product, that we are supposed to be broadcasting to everybody. And that's, I'm very, very sensitive to this, which is why I really hesitate oftentimes to do New York stories, because I realize we need to err the other way. We need to make sure we're doing stories that are not New York based, because we're a bunch of New Yorkers, by and large, based in New York. But there is some things that I just think are interesting enough to be able to talk about and funny enough, like John Sterling and Susan Waldman are just funny. That's not because they're Yankee broadcasters. They're just ridiculously funny and old and bizarre. You know, when Mraz melts down about the Giants, that's just great content, because everybody can feel that pain if you are a diehard fan. But, you know, by and large, I try to stay away from, you know, kind of general run-of-the-mill New York stories, because it's not that interesting unless it crosses some type of line of it's generally interesting, which is why I don't know about Once Upon a Time in Queens. You know, I'm watching this going, this is interesting to me. This is the team that I grew up on. This is why I love baseball. These guys. Is this story interesting in Peoria? Is this story interesting in Pensacola? Is this story interesting in Tucson? And I don't know, Bogues, you know, I don't know, Bilotti, the three of us are Mets fans. This is the team we grew up on. Do you think that story translated, Pete, to a larger audience?
No, I don't. I don't, because of the way the document was set up. You can tell right away. The way that you kept getting clips of NBC coverage of certain news stories and clips of what was going on around at the time, the director of this documentary tried to get a national perspective on this local story. To me, I enjoyed it. I knew a lot of that stuff. I knew some of the stuff I didn't. There were some little bits here and there that I didn't know. But to a national audience, I think they look at it as a team that won 108 games, that had some adversity in the playoffs, and won the World Series. I think that's how. And Buckner.
Yeah, you know, I'm watching this and I'm like, I'll tell you what's interesting to a larger audience: the drug use, the womanizing, how crazy they were.
87.
All of that type of stuff where, you know, that's just naturally salacious. Strawberry is, you know, is a spousal abuser. He's getting into tons of trouble. Dwight Gooden's in a crack house on the morning of the parade. You know, Lenny Dykstra is an absolute nut job. They're fighting everybody on the field. Like, that type of stuff resonates, I think. But Bogues, when I saw them going through year by year, like the 1980 season, the 81 season, the 82 season, 83 season, 84, they win 90 games, 85, they win 96 games. I'm like, I can't imagine season by season, blow by blow of the Mets of the 80s that anybody, you know, in any part of the country besides New York is interested in that. What'd you think?
Yeah, it probably could be three episodes, not four, if they tightened up the beginning. But I mean, but part of that, though, is the player-by-player paths to that 86 team, whether it's Hernandez, Carter, Strawberry, and Gooden. So you need some kind of background there to understand everything that then kind of unravels from there or unfolds from there. So you have to do some kind of backstory, but it was, I wouldn't say tedious, but there was a lot of detail in the first episode they probably could have done without, especially for people who are trying to understand this from the beginning. They might have been overwhelmed by so much New York stuff right out of the gate.
I think so. I really do think so. And I was thinking to myself, the 86 Mets certainly live in lore because they were party animals, because they were crazy, because Straw and Gooden became these tragic figures. because everybody knows Keith Hernandez, everybody knows Gary Carter, everybody knows the Buckner play. They played these iconic baseball games. The 86 Mets live in lore. But what team besides now Jordan's Bulls gets a four-part documentary for winning one championship? I mean, and again, like Jordan's Bulls had to win six to get a 10-parter. I mean, four parts. Now, I loved it specifically. I loved it. But this was made by Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Kimmel's a Mets fan. And I'm watching this going, this is why the rest of America thinks that there's an East Coast bias. Because who else gets four parts of a documentary, four worth shows on a national platform about a team that won one championship?
I think the interesting part of the whole thing is the dynasty that wasn't.
I think you're right.
This team was supposed to be a dynasty.
Yes.
I think if you did the documentary from the World Series of 86 through 90, I think it might, could be something that is appealing nationally.
That's also stories that people don't know as well. I think a lot of this was stories that people know. Now, I will say this. Here's what I thought it did really well. I thought it captured this moment of in time of New York City and of the nation at large in some ways, of this kind of go for broke, anything goes, money and power and wealth and influence and craziness and partying of the 80s, and that the Mets encapsulated that. I think unlike any other championship team, and I really tried to think about what other team was known for its partying, the Mets were known as bad boys. I mean, the book The Bad Guys Won is about the 86 Mets done by Jeff Perlman. What other champions are known as the bad guys because they were just like, you know, womanizers, drug abusers, alcoholics, party animals, argumentative, combative, you know, just crazy. I don't know if there's another team known as that. Maybe the Raiders of the 70s a little bit. The Raiders of the 80s, perhaps. But in terms of one year, one team, I thought that the documentary, Bogues, was very good in tying together how the Mets were of a really crazy New York City of 1984, 85, 86, 87. Those boom years where the city comes back after the low years of the 70s and there's drugs and partying and wealth and Wall Street and that everywhere. That, to me, was probably its best accomplishment, because I think that's a story that's not just a New York story. I think that's interesting to a larger audience.
Which is why, you know, maybe we're kind of over adjusting for like the East Coast bias here. Now, I mean, I was 6, 7, and 8 in this window of 86, 87, 88. So I and was certainly not plugged into what adults were thinking about this team. But I mean, now that we've had conversations about the 86 Mets and New York and the time frame and, you know, subtracting social media, none of that stuff existing back then. I mean, this team did, because it was New York, because that series was the Red Sox and denying the curse-breaking World Series then and the great Game 6 and Game 7. You know, maybe this team did actually transcend New York and the city and become this national thing when there were less things to focus on. So when you had something like this, everyone was at least up to speed on what was going on. Might not be a Met fan, might not have been rooting against them, but you were at least in tune with what their deal was in 86 and 87.
Maybe so. I thought the real big takeaways to me were, number one, that sports has changed so dramatically. That those guys back then were relentless partiers, feared no retribution, got into a bar brawl in Houston and got jailed overnight. Nobody cared. You know, it was just like they could do anything, do anyone, do whatever they wanted, and they didn't fear anything. They didn't fear negative publicity. They didn't fear social media. They didn't fear suspensions from the league. They didn't fear being benched by their manager. They didn't care. So that's so unlike today's sports world, where everybody cares so much about everything. Number two, there's just some things that I can't imagine ever happen ever again. Daryl Strawberry admitted that he was hooking up, getting action during games in between innings, that groupies would come down, and that in the tunnel, Like, how much time do you have? The longest inning ever before you've got to go back out on the field, you know, while your team's hitting and you're just not your spot in the lineup, 12 minutes or so? I mean, could you imagine getting it done in 12 minutes and being like, I'm back on the field, dressed and ready to go? I mean, that to me was mind-blowing, Merez.
Yes, I could. Oh, yes, could. I could imagine. Yeah, probably getting it done 12 times, D.A. I can't imagine that, actually.
Yeah, how about that sneaky humble brag from D.A.? 12 minutes is not nearly enough. Oh, okay.
Stud. 12:30, okay.
Okay. Also, Dykstra is a nightmare, but God, he's good television. I mean, was he not, Merez, was he not the... Oh, you haven't seen it yet.
No, I have not.
The quotes, Bogues, of Dykstra, every one of them was gold. Every one of them. At his tryout, when he's a nobody, the Mets scout has everybody putting down their names, and he goes, I'm Lenny Dykstra, and I'm the best bleeping guy here. And the guy's like, okay. That was his introduction. Dykstra was benched for some reason, or was a platoon player that year. And finally, Davey Johnson puts him in, and Lenny Dykstra says to Davey, oh, so now you finally want to bleeping start winning, huh? And immediately, like, leads off the game with a home run or something like that. Like, he was outrageous, and his brain is so, it's so ground to a pulp, Bogues, with after drugs and everything that he's done, and he's a terrible human being. You know, but he speaks slowly and with a, he's definitely, like, mumbling, and his brain is off. But, I mean, every quote he had was so freaking good. It's like that documentary is not half of what it could be without Lenny Dykstra's quotes, right?
Well, and the last time we spoke about this on the air was Thursday morning in Boise, and I hadn't seen it yet, and I said I was wondering if I can show it to my 7-year-old kid.
No.
If there's cursing, and like you're going along, it's okay, so far so good, and then the first cut to Lenny is that story with Jim McElwain that you just told, and there are, I don't know, 8 curses in 4 seconds. So I'm like, okay, so this is, never mind. Lenny's here.
Yeah.
Take the kids out of the room.
Everybody else knows on camera to speak, you know, professionally, diplomatically, you know, in some type of G-rated form. Lenny's the only guy that is just, he's pointing at the camera, cursing the entire time, and then one time says, yeah, you know, we were part of history. We're part of history. We're like that guy. You know, that the world was flat and that guy, and he found the world. And the producer pauses and there's silence. And he goes, the producer goes, Columbus? And he goes, yeah, that guy. Like, he was like Merez. Like, he didn't know Christopher Columbus's name and really didn't know what he did. But he's like, we're like history like Columbus. Like, holy cow, is his brain fried on everything that he did.
Right. So it makes sense that he doesn't know Columbus. Why doesn't Sean know Columbus?
It's a fair question. I think the documentary is really good if you're a baseball fan. Obviously, if you're a Mets fan like I am, I mean, it's just catnip. It's total, you know, Mets porn. But is it great for a larger audience? I'm not sure.
One quick thing on it. I can't imagine being the World Series MVP and then the next day, right before the parade, knowing that you're not going to be on that team next year.
Yeah, Ray Knight wins the World Series MVP, and then he tells a story that they tried to lowball him on an offer the morning before the parade, which seems kind of crazy. Like, they asked Ray Knight to negotiate his contract the night after Game 7 of the World Series, the morning after, and an hour before the parade begins? Like, is that possible? Is his timeline right? Because Frank Cashin's dead, so he couldn't comment. I said, that timeline didn't sound right. Like, who's negotiating contracts 6 hours after they win the World Series? But maybe. Frank Cashin seemed to be a cheapskate, so perhaps. Andrew Bogus is our headline this morning. Bogues, what do we got?
D.A., it is a game so blah that Sean's okay missing the birth of his daughter for it. No, or he's not. I had a joke and I wrote it wrong. You know what? I'm done. Back to you, D.A.
Oh, wow. Did we have a read
The game
there
is so to? Bad, Sean's okay missing it for the birth of his daughter is what I was supposed to say.
Well, that's a good line.
Because he would normally stick home for Thursday Night Football and not go to the hospital, but he's okay missing Texans, Panthers. Really good job by me. That's your game tonight. 2-0 okay. Carolina, 1-1 Houston, sometime after 8 Eastern. Under center in Indy, we have already heard from Frank Reich this morning, pumping up Jacob Eason because of Carson Wentz's dual sprained ankles.
A lot of unknown. See how my body responds and doing everything we can. Each day's shoot each couple hours, it's gotten better. So we'll kind of see how it continues to progress and listen to the doctors, listen to my body, and see where we're
at. Wentz did not practice yesterday. The Browns had Odell Beckham Jr. back at practice yesterday. Kevin Stefanski will not say if Beckham makes his season debut Sunday, but also not ruling him out at this point. Beckham is coming back from last season's torn ACL. The Red Sox summer swoon has turned into a 7-game win streak. Last night's 12-5 victory over the Mets keeps their 2-game cushion atop the AL wildcard chase. Their manager, Alex Cora.
For everything that we went through a few weeks ago, to be in this position is great, but we don't get caught up in the moment.
As of this morning, there's a new team behind them in that wild card chase.
Pitch swung on and lined down the right field line. It is a base hit going to the right field wall. Gallo scores. Torres goes to second. It's a double. A ribby double for Gleyber Torres.
That, of course, is John Sterling on Yankees radio. The Bombers rallying for a 7-3 win over the Rangers after the Rays lost in Tampa 7-1, so New York leads Toronto by a half game for the second wild card. The Giants outscored the Padres 8-6, while the Dodgers were losing at Coors Field 10-5, so San Francisco leads LA by 2 games out west. San Diego, by the way, now 6 back at the Cardinals for the second wild card. St. Louis, a 10-2 victory in Milwaukee for an 11-game win streak. The Timberwolves fired President of Basketball Operations Gersan Rosas yesterday out of nowhere with training camp about to open. Rosas has also been very active trying to trade for Ben Simmons. The firing reportedly the result of issues with Rosas inside the organization and between him and agents from negotiations. And MLS last night, Nashville SC smoked into Miami 5-1, and the Red Bulls and NYCFC played to a 1-1 draw. The Red Bulls getting even in the 102nd minute, the latest equalizer in MLS regular season history. And now we're stunned.
Woo-hoo!
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
The most stunning part of this might be that it didn't happen in Florida. It was Indiana, and it went down last week. It began with 56-year-old Donald Ricketts allegedly driving drunk, crossing the center line, and hitting a tractor trailer going in the other direction. Mr. Ricketts appeared to recognize his predicament, called his wife to pick him up from the crash scene. Okay. However, Cheryl Ricketts, allegedly drunk herself, so she crashed into Donald's car as she got to the scene. That is when police arrived. Cheryl's blood alcohol level was 0.22. Hubby's was 0.28. He went to the hospital for a non-life-threatening medical issue. Thankfully, the driver of the tractor trailer not injured in either crash. The first one caused by the drunk husband. The second one caused by the drunk wife coming to pick him up, allegedly.
What a nightmare. So this couple is just the worst couple ever. They're both hammered. They both get behind the wheel of a car, and they both crash while doing so. Poseyville, Indiana. Make sure you stay off the road. This is about 3 hours southwest of Indianapolis. So if you're driving through Poseyville, make sure you are looking out for drunk rednecks. You're right, Bogues. This is like the perfect Florida story. And, I mean, the picture of the woman, she looks like a bad-looking lawn gnome. That's saying something.
She does, but oh no.
That's a rough-looking chick. That's a rough-looking wife.
Oh.
Yikes.
She kind of looks like John Ritchie when he was bleeding at the top of his nose. Oh, it's terrible.
Awful. Thomas is next up. He's in New Orleans here on CBS Sports Radio. Thomas, good morning.
Good morning, D.A. Where you at, bro? How's everything?
Everything's good, man. Everything's good. How you doing?
Cool. I'm doing great, man. Enjoying the show. I listen to the show every morning, and my girlfriend thinks Mraz is unbelievably funny because he's so stupid. You know what I'm saying? And she just doesn't get it, right? But she's not a sports fan, but she knows who he is, and she knows who you are.
Okay.
Anyway,
all right.
The next thing for me, I graduated from high school in '86. So, they were very much on my radar. And all my friends' radar, because we were just, warned us about this because Ron Swoboda, who I believe was part of the Miracle Mets, he was a sportscaster down here in New Orleans at the time, and in fact, he still calls them AAA games. So it was very much in the forefront of our daily lives, and we loved all of those guys, Hernandez and Gooden and Straw and all those crazy people or whatever. So and it was just fascinating because they had won. I guess I don't think they'd won a World Series since Swoboda and the Miracle Mets. Is that correct?
Right. Yep. Their last one was '69. Before that, now it's been since '86. Only two championships in Mets franchise history. You're right about the characters on that team being so compelling. I mean, you could only imagine me as a 7 or 8 year old DA. I was 7 in 1986. And to have, Strawberry and Gooden were like my two favorite athletes of all time. Posters on my wall, jerseys, hats, baseball cards, my favorite. When we've had them on the show, that's been my real, oh my God, I can't believe I get to talk to these guys. But also Hernandez and Carter and Dykstra and Mookie Wilson and, on and on and on it went of just crazy characters. And you're just like totally enthralled because there were so many larger-than-life personalities on the same baseball team, and they won the World Series in this kind of crazy, chaotic, bizarre way that it hooked me for life as a baseball fan and certainly as a Mets fan, although my family was already Mets fans because they were Brooklyn Dodgers fans from back in the day. So that was the natural way that it went. My grandma used to watch, Mets games when I was growing up, even before '86, before I was born. When we come back here on the show, Urban Meyer is probably not long for Jacksonville. But here's my theory on how he could end up back in the Big Ten. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Have some fun with your marriage.
Have fun with your marriage.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Thursday morning to you, everybody. Remember that the DA show is available to watch as well. Watch us at watchda.com or on the simulcast on Twitch at CBS Sports Radio's channel there. The USC job is open. I don't think they're going to make a decision up until the end of the season. So let's assume it's December sometime after the regular season and conference championship games end, but before the bowl games begin and the college football playoff. You know that their number one target's James Franklin, and it should be. He's the best fit there. Would Franklin take it? Maybe. I mean, look, Penn State's a great job, but you have a chance to be the power broker in your conference at USC whereas Penn State is going to be chasing Ohio State every single year and banging their heads. Now, maybe they beat Ohio State this year. Ohio State simply does not look as dominant as previous seasons, but you can definitely see James Franklin leaving for the USC job. No questions asked. If that Penn State job opens up at the end of the year, and Jacksonville is 2-15, and Urban Meyer has lost the veterans, and Trevor Lawrence looks as bad as he had the first 2 weeks, and suddenly the bloom is off the rose in Jacksonville for Urban Meyer, which it might already be. And Urban Meyer has dominated in the Big Ten. Does Penn State reach out? I mean, Penn State just watched Urban Meyer build an absolute monster in the conference, in the division of the conference, in the Big Ten. Yeah, they should reach out. Absolutely. If you could replace James Franklin with Urban Meyer, same Midwest type of recruiting roots, although Meyer went down to Florida and went down to Texas to get kids as well at Ohio State. But yeah, Penn State makes that call. Yes, I know it's sleeping with the enemy, but it's better than hiring Eric Bieniemy. Yes, you have to make that call. But does Urban Meyer take that job? Ooh, that even if he gets pushed out of town in Jacksonville, and even though the Penn State job is a really good job, it would mean he would have to then become the villain for Ohio State fans, and I think he likes being a hero in Columbus. So it would take him accepting being the villain, and I'm not sure he's there. But if you're Penn State and you lose James Franklin, you absolutely make the call to Urban Meyer. Hey, you want to come back to college? Want to take over a power program? You can do the same thing you did at Ohio State. We'll talk to Brian Jones next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.